The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Maxi skirts and afro hairdo. People doing their own thing. Don't care about me or you. Nassau's gone funky. Nassau's got soul now. Oh yeah. And we've got a doggone beat now. We're gonna take care of business too. Listen to the drummer playing his beat.
This morning, good morning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk day. It is Friday the 11th of July, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. I got a jam-packed show this morning. I have a guest in studio. My guest in studio is here today to talk with us about a legal action launched against the government. I'm excited about this conversation because I have been lobbying, compelling, encouraging advocates, people with social issues to organize their protests, their advocacy, and prepare themselves to use the courts, right, in their advocacy journey. So I have a guest joining me in studio to talk about the Bahamas Constitution Party's legal motion. They are, and I'm not sure if I'm using the correct language. Sometimes I just get excited to use words. They are suing the government, essentially, over their concerns about the rollout of the BPL and energy reform in the country.
Yes.
Now, that guest joining me is Ms. Ali McIntosh. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, and it's good to be here. Thank you very much for your invitation just to come on with you. And
we're going to talk about this, but we're also going to talk about some of what's in the news. You may know Ms. McIntosh. She is the leader of the Bahamas Constitution Party. She is a political advocate. She is a social advocate. She has been advocating for political reform for decades now, and her form of advocacy, I would call it, you have to be in it to win it, right?
Yes,
but for those people who say, oh, you can't change the system from the outside, Ms. McIntosh is showing that you can change the system from both the inside and the outside. So we're going to get into the conversation about the legal case in a moment. But because Ms. McIntosh is also a social commentator, I've asked her to sit in the intro, be a part of it, and to feel free to comment if she would like to do so. So, but I got to get some little housekeeping out of the way. I can't forget to remind you about the Loyalist Charles Farquharson Will Competition, open to junior and senior high school students across the archipelago. There are now four categories. Well, four categories to win in. You could be a GB student, Grand Bahama student, a New Providence student, a San Salvador student, or a student from the rest of the family of islands, right? And what we're looking for, two pieces of information. The government recording record for Loyalist Charles Farquharson's will. That's the government recording record for Loyalist Charles Farquharson's will. Also, the recorded date of Loyal Charles Farquharson's death. You call in the show, let us know you want to play the game. Transfer you to the producer. You give the producer your information, including your contact information, and we'll let you know whether you've won or not. I'm excited about it. It's a great research project, and it drives focus to the family islands as well. Also, another piece of housekeeping. Congratulations to the Bahamas 14-under Babe Ruth girls softball team. They've been playing in Fort Myers over the last few days, 9th and 10th, I think at the 14-and-under AA Perfect Game Baseball Tournament. And today, this team, they play in the championship. They're playing in the championship, and I want to say a special shout-out. I got two family members that are involved in this team. A special shout-out to my grandniece, Kalia London Green. She's a player. And to my nephew, OJ Green, who is a coach, and many of you will know him as a phenomenal track star. Well, I say good morning and get up and show out. Y'all do it. The Bahamas is out there. Young people are performing well. Okay, so there's lots in the news. Before we get to the BPL case, I let you know I want to touch on essentially three subjects. Headline in The Guardian, over 500 get national honors. Headline in The Tribune, Bryce backs change to law, keeping her out of cabinet. And then the third issue, let me see if there, yeah, here we go. And the top of The Guardian. I want to start with this one. BCC chief calls out church hypocrisy. That's the headline. I'm going to use that to insert, to get into this conversation. I'm going to read briefly. Quote, can I get a church that will just shout for God no matter? Bahamas Christian Council President Bishop Delton Fernanda has condemned what he described as a culture of hypocrisy within the church, accusing many pastors of failing to live by the values they preach and only speaking out when it benefits their political affiliations. Bishop Fernandez said too many religious leaders selectively raise their voices, celebrating when their preferred political party is in power, but remaining silent in the face of wrongdoing by that same party. He called on such leaders to step aside, full stop. Okay, so I saw Bishop Fernandez's name on the list. But I can be honest with you all, when I saw the list late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, I thought it was fake news. Why? Because there's so many names on the list. I wasn't sure what was happening. I wasn't sure if it was real or not. I didn't know if it was a draft, right? Something that hadn't gone to its final edit. But I'm sure I saw Mr. Fernandez's name on the list. And then I also saw that in the midst of intermittent weather, the events were changed slightly, and the ecumenical service was hosted at Bahamas Harvest Church. I have an issue with this. First of all, I have an issue with the idea that a little bit of rain could stop us from celebrating independence in the traditional way that we celebrate independence. People, we live in a hurricane zone. A little bit of water should not stop independence. It concerns me, potentially a national security issue. What you mean you're going to have independence and the people will not be there to observe it? We should all be concerned about that. But I have greater concerns. It's personal to me and professional to me. Personal to me as Erin Green, an LGBTI rights advocate, and professional to me as Erin Green, an LGBTI rights advocate. Let me tell you why. Last year, October 2024, in the midst of local pride celebrations, a lecture was held at the University of the Bahamas. I was one of the panelists. In the audience, the U.S. Chargé, Usha Pitts, attended. You know who also attended? Bishop Fernanda and Pastor Mario Moxie. Behind them, with them, sitting on the side of them, near them, were a group of interested but agitated followers. That lecture turned into an awe. Let me tell you what I mean. At some point in the lecture, the U.S. Embassy staff thought it prudent to escort the chargé from the venue for security reasons. After the formal discussion ended, UB security felt it prudent to escort the panelists to their car. What I was told, out of an abundance of caution. Why? Because a small group of attendees decided that they were going to turn it into a protest, into a riot. They had some of the panelists on the stage crying. Bishop Delton Fernanda and Mario Moxie. And now, as a citizen, I must sit and watch Mr. Fernanda on the National Honors List. And I must sit and watch the ecumenical service being held at Mario Moxie's church. I'm afraid we don't even know what accessibility means. See, these are not the only people affiliated with the state who seem to have an inability to moderate their behavior when contentious issues are being discussed. See, many of us in the advocacy world have had to deal with an individual who had frequently launched attacks against them, being hired by the government as a crime consultant. And then in his capacity as a crime consultant, well, while he operated as a crime consultant and also hosted a radio show, he used the radio show to continue attacking those advocates. Some of them were actually his colleagues. They were also consultants for the government. In fact, a few months ago, I was made to witness that same gentleman attack a former magistrate verbally at a state-sponsored conference called Rooting Out the Violence, with defense force officers and police force officers, with ministers of state in the room. This person felt no issue with getting up and launching a verbal attack against not just a colleague in the government's business, but a prominent member of society who has dedicated decades of their life advocating on behalf of vulnerable women and children. This weekend, I was involved in a conversation about white and black relations and whether national events, this is a part of the conversation, are accessible to white Bahamians. Why don't they participate? Why don't they show up and show out like the rest of us Bahamians? Well, I want to tell you, it's not just them alone that do not feel like they are part of the national story. It's not just white people. In fact, let me share y'all something. How do you think the Rastafarian community feels that you have in a national ecumenical service, their religious leaders have not been invited, but they got to listen to a Bahamian gospel group perform a Jamaican gospel song with bad Jamaican accents? But Bahamian Rastafarians are not, priests are not invited to participate in the national ceremony. In fact, this year, the ceremony wasn't even accessible to Bahamians, to citizens. We're going to get into, so I wanted to make that note. Because sometimes somebody has to say something. Yes, it's our job to be critical about everything, but especially our national honors. Ms. McIntosh,
good,
we'll bring you into the conversation. I know I said a lot just now.
Yes, in fact, two or three mouthfuls.
I don't want it to be seen as an attack against the church generally. An attack against the church at all, right? I think that we have to make a distinction between the thing that is the church, that stakeholders in the church are called to uphold and protect, and individual members of the church. But this is not to launch an attack against the church or any specific religious grouping. It's really a critique on accessibility to national events.
Yeah, you raise a good point, and good morning to your audience. It's a pleasure after a 52nd anniversary of independence.
Yes, ma'am.
To be here to speak about things that matters to us. Some of the things that you have brought up in regards to your concern is the matter of fundamental rights. As people are aware, I am the leader of the Bahamas Constitution Party. I call myself a constitutionalist. Mm-hmm. I have been an advocate and an activist regarding many things in the community, but basically the fact that we all, as Bahamians, have a right to exist. Mm-hmm. I can also say that I wrote a book, How to Reconstruct a Nation.
Yes.
So clearly those matters relating to fundamental rights and people's desire to be a part, feel a part, and to be included is very important. Mm-hmm. And while I am a Christian and I promote Christian principles as the preamble of the Constitution advises. A democratic country means we must provide equality and equity in regards to the inclusion of all in the society. Mm-hmm. As Bahamians, that is an important part when it comes to the fundamental rights. It does not mean we have to promote whether their lifestyle or whatever it is they're doing, but they do have a right to exist. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, part of what the fundamental rights speaks so that could happen.
Absolutely. With all Bahamians. And I just think that we don't spend enough time considering what it means to make a national event accessible to all citizens of the nation, right? When we talk about mobility access, right? We talk about people with wheelchairs, people with mobility issues, people with visual or hearing issues. We catch it right away. Oh, you need interpreters, right? You need someone that's doing sign language. Oh, you need ramps, right? You need seating that's easy to access for people with mobility issues. We get that part, but we don't necessarily think about what it means to make a national event accessible to Bahamians of European descent. What it means to make a national event accessible to family islanders, right? That everything happens in the center. Very rarely do we think about the dynamics of the family island. In fact, one Nasuvian who recently moved to Eleuthera, he was online asking, what's happening? Why am I looking at two ecumenical services, right? They're different events, different feeds, but with no idea of what was actually happening on the ground, right? And even sitting back at home, I didn't know that the ecumenical service had been moved to Bahamas Harvest. I thought that the ecumenical service took place at the fort and the cultural show was moved to the 10th, to the Family Fun Day event, right? And so I don't think that at the state level, people acknowledge an obligation to make things accessible and be understand what making things accessible really means.
You know, the idea, and I speak often about the reconstruction of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, which is a BCP mandate. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, of course, the book obviously is of the same theme. When we say that, we mean there is a lot of issues and things happening in the country, as you say, the concern for accessibility, because as a Bahamian, you want to be involved. Mm-hmm. As a Bahamian, as a part of your religion, because one of the fundamental rights, you have a freedom of religion, you have a freedom to change your religion, mm-hmm. you have a freedom to voice your opinion, you have a freedom of movement. However, when the state, even though the state says, well, we are going to promote Christian principles, which means we have a religious service, it does not mean people have to be excluded. Mm-hmm. We understand the Rastafarian community has been very active throughout the years, and their participation, they have their own activity, not necessarily for independence, but they have their own activity. But in the national events, I think there has to be made plans for everybody to participate. A church service is a church service. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just basically a church service. However, the other persons in their acknowledgement of who they are, there can be provisions made for them in different circumstances. That's why, and I will say this point, and end this particular point, when it comes to the ecumenical service, we should go back to where an ecumenical service was held separately from the other national events, mm-hmm. in order that there is no confusion. If there is a church service, which is an ecumenical service, that can be held.
Yeah.
And then you can have a service that recognizes other people based on what it is they are bringing to the table.
Or why not, for the national event, have an interfaith service, right, where you invite the religious leaders from each religion present in the country, registered in the country, right, because I think they have to register under the NPO Act now, right? So all registered churches come together. If they have an association, like the Anglicans will send one person, right? The Methodists will send one person. So you have an interfaith service where the religious leaders bring greetings from their congregation, from their faith base, and then you can host an ecumenical service, which is, say, ecumenical is different Christian churches, interfaith is different religions.
Yeah, so the point is there is space for all of that.
Yes,
because, you know, we've had this conversation before. We've been activists in being being activists for women's rights and women's empowerment for many years. Mm-hmm. But the matter of a church service is a church service.
Yeah.
An interfaith service or meeting is also something else. So there can be space for that to operate. But we can't move away from that which the founders intended, which even though, and Sir Arthur Folk said to me, a democratic country means we are tolerant of all religions. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if it was some other religion like a Buddhist or Muslim, Christianity would not be tolerated. However, because we state that we are a democratic country, means we can have an ecumenical service of religious and we can have an interfaith service of other persons. Because as Bahamians, they want to be included in what is happening in the nation. Mm-hmm. And if we are going to make Bahamians feel welcome in their country, it means that they have to participate in matters of that level. We're talking about other religions, so it should there should be space for that.
Absolutely. And I can tell you, just before we transition, a couple of our Buddhist and Muslim brothers and sisters can call in and say, no, there are spaces throughout the world, right? Not in the global north, in the global south, in the eastern hemisphere, in the east, right? There are places where Christians and Muslims and Buddhists and many religions coincide. In fact, when we look at the state of Israel, right, and we look at the surrounding countries, we find that, like, culturally, these people are sharing space. It's at the political level, right, that there is this disruption. Now, and you said the religious level, they obviously agree different things, right?
Sharing space.
But they are sharing space, right? And culturally, people have learned how to live together. Sometimes it's the politics overlaid, right, over a cultural sort of space that causes the contention. Like, for instance, and just as an aside, we're looking at the dynamic with Haiti and the Bahamas, right? There's a cultural, historic cultural relationship the Bahamas has with Haiti that the legal or political construct of nationhood cannot interpret. It can't tolerate it, right? The Haiti, a nation state, the Bahamas, a nation state. That conversation does not capture what the cultural relationship between the Bahamas and Haiti raises. And sometimes we have to take the time to make the distinction, right, between what is a political narrative and what is a cultural narrative.
You are so correct, and I do think it is important for people to understand, to do the division when it comes to, as you say, religious matters, cultural matters, national matters, political matters. Because even though we're having this conversation, and I do think sometimes we have to tone it down in regards to the height of the conversation, that we continue to row about some things until it becomes almost
feudish, like this, and then there's no need to row on these points.
Have to, because when we're talking about the immigration issue with Haitians, we act as if we get in the argument where we act as if Haitians are not people too. Mm-hmm. But the point is, we also have friends who are Haitian. We go to church with people who are Haitian. We don't have that narrative on that level. So why do we have to take the narrative to such a nauseam level when it comes to the national scene? So we have to be able, and we have to what they call intellectual intelligence, where you can divide between what is political and what is actually personal or religious.
So or if cultural.
We divide or cultural.
Yeah.
So if we divide all of them in our mind, emotional intelligence, that's the word I was looking for.
And empathy.
We will be able to see differently in regards to how we deal with matters.
Absolutely. Let me get to the text line, and then we're going to look over the list just very quickly. I got a text here that says, oh, it's a lot of text. Aaron, I think it's important to set personal feelings aside when it comes to celebrating national pride. It seems like you're politicizing the issue a bit. That said, I actually agree with you on one point. It was definitely surprising to hear Bahamian singers using Jamaican accents at a Bahamian event. I noticed that too, and it felt out of place. All right, the text goes on. Personal experiences are valid, but being Bahamian means celebrating our shared identity, which includes our culture and Christian heritage. Since Christianity is a core part of Bahamian life and Bahamas Harvest Church is part of that cultural fabric, holding a service there was fitting. No one was turned away at the door, and the focus was on unity, not exclusion. That particular critique about Bahamas Harvest Church was not about the ecumenical service being held in a church. The ecumenical service is a church service, right? So I don't have any problem with that. It was the choice to hold it at that church. Now, that choice may have been logistics. That may have been about the capacity, the size, location. How many people you could hold, the location, and it also could have been about the technical capacity to broadcast what was happening inside
the
venue.
And then making a decision at the last minute.
So I get all of that, right? I get all of that. I'm casting a spotlight on how some Bahamians feel, right, after witnessing that, especially those Bahamians who would have participated in that talk. And maybe it was just 12 of us. Maybe it was 30 people. Maybe it was 100 people, right? But the point is, in a national exercise, you must show that you've taken every step to attempt to include everybody. We know that it may not be possible, right? We know that it's virtually impossible to include everybody, and it is impossible to ensure that everyone feels included, because that's subjective. But you must show that you have attempted to make it as inclusive as possible. And so, and I'm not just talking about like a personal experience. Like I said, this one shook me. Not personally, I was not upset. In fact, I was moved, but not, right, by their actions. But I thought it was important to note that the atmosphere that they created by their constant heckling, the language that they used, their inability to moderate their behavior, caused the U.S. Embassy staff to make a security decision to remove the charge from an event that took place at the University of the Bahamas. And how do we, as LGBT people, feel that a person who participated in that scene is given a national honors? And maybe there's nothing to be done to prevent them from getting a national honor, but surely the public has a space to discuss it. The public has a space to say, hey, we see what you did, and here is why we don't like it, and here's why we're concerned, and here's why we think that the issue is broader than just the LGBT community. Are you looking at the paper right now? And I can tell you,
Could I interject here?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, ma'am.
What I think is important here, and I mentioned this last week when I was on a TV show, that we have to tone down whatever it is we are doing, because we are not only offending, we're not, and everybody knows how I feel when it comes to the LGBT community, but as a constitutionalist, as a person looking to lead the nation, obviously my conversation has to be, how do I believe what I believe? But I also know that Aaron Green has a right to exist. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes, as you say, there has to be space for the conversation to say, I do object to this idea of the LGBT too. But however, I have no problem with the human. We always say that, you know, God don't love the sin, but he loves the sinner. What does that mean to a Christian person? Mm-hmm. Do we throw out the sinner if we say God loves the sinner? How do we find a way to have the conversation that makes it? Because a lot of times young people are so offended by what we are saying, we push them further into where we are trying to get them out of. Mm-hmm. Now, we must have the conversation to bring them closer to the table so I can find out what's going on with you. Mm-hmm. Why are you operating this way? Why are you acting this way?
And that's what Reverend Simeon Hall said as well, right? In his, I don't want to say transition at all, and pun not intended, but Simeon Hall, you know, he came to a point when he said, listen, you know what? If I know that there are gay people in my congregation, I'm going to preach a message that shows them that they need to be in the church. And not to say like, oh, you need to be in the church, but this space is for you. Come close to the Bible. Come close to your church community.
Yes, come closer. In fact, you have to come one step,
right? Because if I think there's something wrong with you and that you need healing, I'm going to bring you closer to me. Anyway, and I just think that that's a powerful message because that's the space in which the conversation happens.
In fact, that's how we will convert people or just love them back to where they need to be. Because this conversation in the middle is very important.
Mm-hmm.
How we and see, a lot of times we say a lot of young people, according to the report, try to kill themselves. And we've seen some actually did.
Yeah.
Because bullying is not good. Being misunderstood is even worse.
Yeah.
So how do I say to somebody, I need to talk to somebody because I don't know what's happening? And what is happening in this country is so many adults in very important public, religious, political places are misusing and abusing young people. And because that is happening, and they have found themselves in a position where they may be in a feeling, a homosexual feeling, they don't know how to say to somebody, especially if they're in a church, how do I move past this?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to find a way in our conversation, not only in the religious community, but in the social community, to bring young people to a soft place to mm-hmm. say, talk about it.
Because here's a question, and I come to you, Carlos, here's a question that we need to put on the table, or create a space where young people could ask.
Yes.
They could ask, listen, am I gay or am I just hypersexualized? Right? Like, am I truly experiencing a homosexual orientation, or have I lost myself, right, in a culture of hypersexuality?
Of abuse.
And sexual violence and abuse, right? And so I think we need to, at the very least, whether you agree with it or not, create a space where young people could sit and say, look, here, I got this question I'd be asking myself all the time. Am I really homosexual? Am I attracted to the same sex outside of the act of intercourse, right? Am I actually attracted to a person of the same sex, or am I in the midst, the throes of a sexual addiction?
It is just confusion. I have found that when young people have been abused early in their life, before they have become a man or a woman, they have been abused, and so they are confused. Sometimes they're not sure. And if anybody have heard Donnie McClurkin's recent testimony, that when he was abused at the age of 8, that took his life in a whole different direction. Mm-hmm. And that happens with a lot of young people, and they have to understand, we understand, it's the adults who are doing this to young people.
Yeah, the adults are wrong.
The adults are wrong.
Yeah.
And the adults, we have to find a way first to eradicate that garbage out of the country, because I'm hearing it is happening in a lot of circles.
Well, and when you say garbage, here's what I interpret that to mean. The levels of predatory sexual behavior in this country,
yes.
The levels of grooming, the levels of coercion, right? The ways in which we set up and manipulate not just young people, but people to achieve our aim, right? Young people are getting caught up in that, and it's nasty, and it's sickening. And I'm looking at all the political parties when I say this, y'all need to stop it. Y'all need to stop it. Anyway, that's what was on my heart for independence.
I'm going to have to agree with you.
Yeah.
Because it is the reason I have stood, well, of course, I have a divine mandate when it comes to the BCP. But the point is, we see a lot of people running up and down trying to get elected. If that's going to be the way I'm going to be elected, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've stayed out. Because I believe that when people invest in their children, send them to school, to college, to university, and they want to serve in their country, and they must move past this barrier. I am so ashamed that people will do that to young people.
Yeah.
It has to stop, and so I have to agree with you in this regard that predatory behavior and abuse of young people is why we have confused young people who are going in a direction that they don't want to go.
As an advocate, I would say when you look at the global stats that say roughly 4% of your population will present as homosexual, right? Like statistically, the numbers we're seeing here in the Bahamas suggest to me that a culture of acceptance of sexual violence and social violence has created an environment where young people are experiencing a hypersexuality that, like you say, causes many of them to not be certain, to be confused. And it's a space that we have to talk about. But I got the phone line, yes. And then we still have to talk. Good morning, caller. Good morning, sir.
Your guest.
Yeah. Good morning,
sir. She said something very, 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 very integral into this conversation, right? And so, as I listen, those are one of the reasons why I'm reluctant to send my young daughter and my son to any institution, because I like you. I know you personally, right, Aaron? So I know that you're not a predator. I know that you're an adult. You're an anti-imperialist, capitalist, and a humanitarian person, right? So I'm looking at this whole chain of human rights. When we look at the abuses by the police, a case like Bradley Taylor, et cetera, et cetera. We have Cleaver Duncombe speaking about child advocacy for almost, 24 years now? 23
Absolutely.
Years,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the predatory... What I'm mindful of is, I'm very old and my son is very young and my daughter's young. I'm 60, right? So you know what I'm up against. So I'm looking at how the gay community, those in humanitarian and philanthropy, how they have enhanced their predatory skills. So just an hour and a half before your conversation came on, I was in the friend and the shop talking to my coworker, and I was telling him how if I carry my son to church, I will go there and stay there. Even as I sit in Sunday school, because what I notice is, if I go to church and any male or any pastor or anybody approaches him, and even if their voice is, if I hear a little effemination, like how I hear from the Lord John next to me, if I hear the effemination in their voices, I don't trust my son around them. You see me? This is what I'm saying is, so the fact that people have confessed to what have been done to them by the elitist class on this radio station, about how they, you know, people have disclosed these things over the decades of what has happened to them, right? I have known about some incidents as it relates to the urban renewal scheme. So what I'm saying is, in order for people to feel safe, you cannot allow these characters to be in these humanitarian entities, because you have to police this. You're destroying the youth, you're destroying the young girls, and you're destroying the men. So you, like I'm saying, Aaron, so, you know, you need to police these things. There has to be greater consequences. We heard there's another guy when the Lord the other day when he kissed the little youth. I hear the things on the radio on these things, right? So, I mean, do it to an adult, man. Somebody who's consenting, man. Because, you know, if somebody lose their head and hurt you, I supposed to be the bad one, Miss Green?
I got you.
And then,
I got you, 52.
That's the statement I'd like to make.
Okay,
then,
I got a couple callers.
You guys totally, because nobody can excommunicate you from God. One will do that to himself. Nobody has the power.
That's right.
To excommunicate you from God. And this is what sickens me. And I'm not going to send my children, sometimes cynical, but, you know, the effemination is too prevalent in the church. And we see all the secrecy of the Roman papacy, I mean, the Catholic Church here and there. And these people who, I mean, it's
thank you,
ridiculous.
Thank you, 52. Absolutely. I got a couple more callers on the line, and I got texts I want to go through. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. I'm sorry we lost you. Let's go to the next caller, producer. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. Sorry we lost you. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. But listen, don't be mad at me. I could only give you 30 seconds because me and Ms. McIntosh talk about plenty, plenty more.
I'm going to be quick.
Yes, sir.
Let me just say this to you quickly.
Yes, sir.
You are over the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
So your lifestyle and your thing, that doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing to do with that. But what I want to ask you, I hear you mention churches a lot. You must believe in God at some point.
Hmm? Yes.
Do you believe God makes mistakes?
No.
Okay, so why, don't get offended, please. Mm-hmm. Please don't get offended, you're my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you think God made a mistake and made you a woman, and you feel like you should be a man?
Okay, so two things. Let's start here. I've never said that I feel like I should be a man. Never, ever. Never, ever
okay,
have I said
are.
That.
Okay,
so no, pause. No, we ain't rowing. Hold on, we ain't rowing. I'm safe, we ain't rowing.
Go ahead.
Rowan, I heard everything you say. I've never, ever, ever suggested I want to be a man. Like, because I like to wear pants, that don't mean I want to be a man. Because I don't wear makeup, that don't mean I want to be a man. I mean, like, the way that I dress, all of these things, to dress modestly, to cover your body, to don't wear makeup, all of these things you could find in the Bible. That's not why I do it necessarily, but let's put that aside. Because I say that I'm in a relationship with a woman doesn't mean that I think that I'm a man. But let's, you see, using the same phrase you use, if you believe that God doesn't make mistakes, right, then... these people who are saying, some of these people who are saying that they're gay, is that a mistake? Or is it a does it have a purpose, right? But here's my thing. Let's go back to what you said. I'm over 18.
Yeah.
Young people under the age of 18, right?
They're the ones I worry about.
Right, and it's our job to create as safe a space as possible for them.
Yes.
That's our job. And we slunk in. We are derelict in our duty. In fact,
allow
we've abdicated our responsibility.
Allow me to say this in closing.
Yeah, yeah.
I am not afraid to go around a bunch of men who like men.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not afraid. People ask me, I tell them I will go. I know myself. Those people know their people. You know, they you'll have to show them some type of something for them to come to you, like to talk to you. That's how I feel it.
And exactly, and most, and listen, I thank you.
I know of myself, I'm sure of myself.
Thank you very much. See, the thing that we're talking about is not exclusive to the LGBT community, the culture of predatory behavior, right? The predatory culture is not just gay people, right? It's the predatory culture that concerns me most. All right, here's another text. Aaron, we're tired of hearing about Haiti, to be honest. It's Bahamas independence. Also, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings, but, you know, only once y'all all in heaven. We are all sinners, but we can stop sinning. 70% of Americans are against this gay agenda. We are being fed a fake facade online. Okay, so stick a pin. See, here's this thing about cultural imperialism. The U.S. media ain't talking to you. And if they are talking to you, you need to ask yourself, why are they talking to you? This gay agenda, the America, are they feeding us? Who feeding you in the Bahamas? What has the gay agenda in the Bahamas fed you? Right? Even people in advocacy in the region, in the gay community, say, yeah, you know what? The Democratic Party, they went too far. They went so far beyond what people could conceptualize. Right? Like we get that, but you in the Bahamas, why are you rowing me about what Americans doing in their media? What are you doing in your media?
Well, what I think, could I interject here for a minute, Aaron?
Uh-huh.
Oh, we still have the caller on? No.
No. Let's see. Good morning, caller. No. There we go.
Yeah, there is difference regarding the gay agenda, which I stand against, because the gay agenda is different from people just being gay or being homosexual or lesbian.
Well, the gay agenda is not the same thing as gay people's lives.
Yes, it's a political discussion and advocacy for certain rights. And that obviously is to be condemned based on when you're trying to do things to make the society submit to those things that you want, like gay marriages or same-sex marriages, or people have no right against what it is that agenda is speaking of. So we have to look at the agenda different than, in some cases, from just people who are gay.
But not just that. Make sure that, like...
Because the Lord loves the sinner, as you say. He doesn't like the sin. And the political... When we say the gay agenda, it's a political agenda.
Right. And then that's an American agenda. And you live in the Bahamas.
Not necessarily how the Bahamas looks at it.
Right. I mean, not the issues that American advocates are working towards are not all the same issues that Bahamian advocates towards, right? And so, like McIntosh said, like, let's make sure that we can separate what is a political agenda from what is the lives of ordinary people.
Yes, because what we have seen, a lot of ordinary people change what they're doing because of how they are loved out of what they're doing. Because how they are able to deal with the issues of abuse or predatory behavior towards them, and they realize, I'm not really even gay. It's just that my uncle raped me, or my father raped me, or I was molested, or I'm still being molested.
And I was unable to process that trauma properly, and I would like a space to be able to say without being beat up, listen, I have
problems.
I have sexual attraction towards people, and I think it's rooted to sexual abuse that occurred when I was younger. It's about the conversation. Okay, let's run through the text line very quickly. I honestly don't think Ms. McIntosh and her party are serious about wanting to govern the Bahamas in the past, present, and future. I could be honest with you.
Why would they say that?
Let me respond to that.
Yeah, you go ahead.
BCP is one of the most serious parties I've seen. I mean, one of the parties I've seen who's most serious about governance. Their politics, right? That's what their problem is. They're not interested in playing the politics. Another quick text. Good morning, Ms. Green. Don't want to change your topic. Guess it's still too early to get 50 independence costs. Okay, Texter, I don't know why you said it. I just can run through this headline very quickly. Ms. McIntosh, Bryce backs change to law, keeping her out of cabinet. Listen, Ms. Bryce, it has nothing to do with whether you related to a web shop owner or operator. You know what it is? You can't count. Ms. Bryce, you can't count. You can't count. Hold on. You can't give us the expenditure report for the 50th independence anniversary. We ain't seen the expenditure report for the 51st anniversary. That's why you can't count. That's why you can't be in the cabinet. Okay.
No, but in addition to that, the gaming regulation was that no member of parliament or cabinet person be in there. The founders intended to separate the power and the money. We were coming out of that with the Bay Street Boys. Let's separate it. You can't have all the money and all the power. And I detest the fact that the PLP is trying to change the law and to make sure that they get gaming license people in the cabinet so they can give themselves more gaming license.
What's worse is I would hope that you're not using the lovely Mrs. Leslea Miller-Bryce, right, as a red herring for somebody else. Even though the woman can't count, Her Excellency is a stateswoman, and y'all don't do that to her. Okay, listen, I don't know why I keep turning over this page and seeing Adrian Fox. I don't know why I keep turning over this. I turn it over, and I hope when I turn it back, his face is not there. But that's not...
See, this has become a society where we call good evil and evil good, and we legitimize it. And because we have to legitimize money, see, money is the power structure in this country that nothing actually comes with. Because all of the people.
Yes, Ms. McIntosh.
Who deserves the national honor don't get it. However, we're putting people to get it just because they are friends and they are buddies.
Because you cannot have come from being accused of human trafficking and human smuggling.
Yeah,
to donating 27-foot by 14-foot pool to the government, and then you get a national honor. Anyway, that's what we'll be here to talk about this morning. Ms. McIntosh, in the last few moments of the show, let us make the Bahamian public aware. Well, that's why I've invited you. When I saw it, I thought this is something to talk about. This is the title of the press release that I saw that prompted me to call Ms. McIntosh. Bahamas Constitution Party defeats Attorney General's office motion to strike out in critical legal battle with government over Pike Corporation agreement. The Bahamas Constitution Party is pleased to announce a pivotal victory in the Supreme Court following an attempt by the AG, to office of the AG, to strike out the motion for an injunction and leave for a judicial review filed against the government of the Bahamas over the BPL Pike Corporation agreement in August 2024.
Well, let me help you really quickly. I know we're running out of time. The Bahamas Constitution Party, in addition to independent candidate Corinne Hanchel, decided to bring a legal action against the government of the Bahamas since August 2024, from July. And the reason the legal action is we believe that the government did not go through correct parliamentary resolution to transfer the 100% of the electricity grid, New Providence Electricity Grid, to the Bahamas Grid Company. Meanwhile, they turn around and take the Bahamas Grid Company and give 60% to the Island Grid, which is the local company of Pike Corporation, a foreign company. So we took them to court over the matter. Fast forward, what the Attorney General had originally said that they would be able to defend the accusations. However, instead, they used state's power to attempt a motion to dismiss the BCP's claim. However, when we went to court last week, two things, that motion could not be heard. The register, the acting registrar, was sitting on a case. It is a constitutional matter. We don't think that a registrar, an acting registrar, had jurisdiction to actually hear the case. Therefore, the motion that the Attorney General bring could not go forward, and the BCP will now go before a judge to actually speak the case for a judicial review over that matter with BPL and Pike.
All right, then, so the case's concern is that the proper procedural requirements were not followed.
Several things. Number one, the proper parliamentary resolution has not been. There is no record of where that was actually made, a cabinet decision and a parliamentary resolution. The second thing, they did not have widespread consultation from the Electricity Act, from the IRCA Act, and the energy policy.
So as required by those three.
And then the third thing is that the electrical grid, which belongs to BPL, has been given to the Bahamas Grid Company, which they call a PPP, but 60% of that was given to Island Grid, which is Pike's company, mm-hmm. Pike Corporation's company. So we have a problem at 60% given. And the reason this is important is if all of this belongs to the Bahamian people through Bahamas Power and Light, what did Pike bring to the table to guarantee them 60% of our property? And the government is out of order, break the law, because it could not be done without a resolution when we think of all the pieces of property that is involved in the New Providence electrical grid. So for them to proceed forward without an actual resolution stating that Pike Corporation would get 60% of our property is totally out of order. And so we do have them before the court. The acting registrar had to actually, he didn't make a ruling, but his ruling is that they will send us before a judge. What the Attorney General was trying to do with his state's power is to avoid the case to go before a sitting justice who has to. It is in their remit to speak to constitutional matters. The acting registrar did not have the jurisdiction to do so.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. McIntosh. Where can people find this conversation taking place? On the BCP's website?
The BCP website, yes. You can go to the BCP website or you can give us a call. Our email is mybcpparty@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Our website is bcpparty.org, or you can call us 524-1798, our WhatsApp, and we can get any further information to you. Our deputy leader is on the Google, on the Global Radio today.
Okay, talking about
this.
We've been
speaking about this today, every Tuesday and every Thursday, and we're about making sure that the government feet stays to the fire.
Absolutely.
To get the work done.
As we go, I hope Mr. Nuri let me talk in his show. I don't know. He may not even let me stay in the studio. He may send me home. But the point is this. Look here. There's no global gay agenda destroying conservative traditional principles in the Bahamas. It's conservative traditional people who are destroying their own institutions by a lack of attention to the space that they occupy within them. We always got to look at ourselves first. Anyway, Ms. McIntosh, thank you very, very much. It's been On the Clock with Erin Green. Y'all tune in tomorrow. We're going to be talking National Honors and the Global Health Youth Report. We haven't stopped talking about that. And Ms. McIntosh, thank you for bringing that into the conversation today as well. Again, you guys stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri is up next.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. Name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
At Cleveland Clinic, care is everything. So when your primary purpose is to care for the world, you'd start with your community until you're accessible anywhere. You make complexities your specialties and put compassion before anything else, all to redefine what's possible for everyone, everywhere. For every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic.
Abaco, get ready for the summer's official rum and beer link up. Royalty Sounds present Found Facts.
Found Facts.
Saturday, July 5th, Morris Harbor, Abaco.
At the Royal Recreational Ground.
Gates open 5 p.m., $20 entry.
Ladies free before 8 p.m.
With Nassau and Abaco's hottest DJ.
Don't miss the Beer Drinkers versus Rum Drinkers competition.
All right, pull it for the best side, Isaac.
Damn rum for me.
Found Facts, July 5th, Abaco. Sponsored by Collect, the Mayor of the Bahamas. Drink responsibly.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.